Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Giriparatari. Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Giriparatari. Yasoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yasoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yamunatsira Panachari. Yamunatsira Panachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhaktivrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Panchakalpa Trubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnebhyo Namo Namaha. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Vitale Srimata Bhaktivedanta Swami Tinamane Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nivishesha Sunyavadi Paschacha Deshatarine. So we're beginning a new chapter today. So Canto 7, Chapter 14, Text 1. So... So we can chant responsibly. Shri Yudhisthira Uvacha. Grihastha etam padavim. Vidhina yena chanyasya. Yayate parishe bruhi. Madisho kriyamudhashihi. Sri Yudhisthira vacha. Grihastha etam padavim. Vidhina yena chanyasa. Yaya devarishe bruhi. Madisho kriha mutadi. Sri Yudhisthira vacha. Grihastha eham padavim. Vidhina yena chanyasa. Yaya devarishe bruhi. Madisho kriya mudhadi. Please chant. Sri Yudhisthira vacha. Grihastha etam padavim. Vidhina yena chanyasa. Yaya devarishi bruhi. Madonsha mudati. Sri Yudhisthira vacha. Grihastha etam padavim. Vidhina yena chanyasa. Yayate parishe bruhi. Madisho kriyamudhadi. Sri Yudhisthira vacha. Grihastha etam padavim. Vidhina yena chanyasa. Yaya devarishe bruhi. Madrisho kriya mudati. Sri Yudhisthira vacha. Grihastha etam padavim. Vidhina yena chanyasa. Yaya devarishe bruhi. Madisho kriya mudati. Sri Yudhisthira vacha. Grihastha etam padavim. Vidhina yena chanyasa. Yaya devarishi bruhi. Madrisho kriya mudati. Sri Yudhisthira vacha. Grihastha etam padavim. Vidhina yena chanyasa. Yaya devarishe bruhi. Madisho kriya mudati. So the word for word. Sri Yudhisthira vacha. Yudhisthira Maharaj said, Grihasthaha, a person living with his family. Etam, this, the process mentioned in the previous chapter. Padavim, Physician of Liberation, Vidhina, according to the instructions of Vedic scripture, Yena, by which, Sha, also, Anyasa, easily, Yayat, may go, may get, sorry, Deva Rishi, a great sage among the demigods. Ruhi, kindly explain. Madrisha, such as me. Griha Madha, completely ignorant of the goal of life. Translation. Maharaj Yudhisthira inquired from Narada Muni, O my Lord, O great sage, kindly explain how we who are staying at home without knowledge of the goal of life may also easily attain liberation according to the instruction of the Vedas. So the purport, Srila Prabhupada's writing. In the previous chapters, the great sage Narada has explained how a brahmachari, a vanaprastha, and a sannyasi should act. He first explained the dealings of a brahmachari, vanaprastha, and sannyasi because these three ashrams or statuses of life are extremely important for fulfillment of the goal of life. One should note that in the brahmachari ashram, vanaprastha ashram, and sannyas ashram, there is no scope for sex life, whereas sex is allowed in grihastha life under regulation. Narada Muni, therefore, first described brahmacharya, vanaprastha, and sannyas because he wanted to stress that sex is not at all necessary, although one who absolutely requires it is allowed to enter grihastha life or household life, which is also regulated by the Shastras and Guru. Yudhisthira Maharaj could understand all this. Therefore, as a grihastha, he presented himself as Griha Mudhadi, one who is completely ignorant of the goal of life. A person who remains a householder in family life is certainly ignorant of life's goal. He's not very much advanced in intelligence. As soon as possible, one should give up his so-called comfortable life at home and prepare to undergo austerity or tapasya. Tapo divyam patraka. According to the instructions given by Rishabdev to his sons, we should not create a so-called comfortable situation, but must prepare to undergo austerity. This is how a human being should actually live to fulfill life's ultimate goal. So Narada Muni has been having this conversation with Maharaj Yudhisthira. So here Maharaj Yudhisthira is asking a question. So it's setting the scene for discussion on grihastha life, because that's the interesting thing in all the previous chapters on the four orders and the four spiritual orders of life, there wasn't discussion about the grihasthas, you may have noticed. So finally, this is the part where Maharaj Yudhisthira is bringing up that particular ashram. And interestingly, he's actually taking a particular position. So the position he's taking is one where he's presenting himself as a Griha Mudadi. So somebody who's completely ignorant of the goal of life. So it's always good to take the position of ignorance, because then hopefully one will hear everything. So one wants to understand right in the beginning what that goal of life is. And this goal of life is defined by Lord Krishna. You'll find it in Bhagavad Gita, right in the second chapter, in the 71st verse. This is what he says. A person who's given up all desires for sense gratification, who lives free from desires, who has given up all sense of proprietorship, and is devoid of false ego, he alone can attain peace. So that's the goal. So we'll look at this particular goal and how it is being worked towards by the grahasta. So this goal, of course, that's been defined by Lord Krishna that I've just read, is that perfect stage of Krishna consciousness, because one's actually able to understand one's position in relation to Lord Krishna. And one isn't claiming one's material body to be oneself, and also one isn't falsely claiming proprietorship of everything. So right away, one can say that it's this desire to become Krishna conscious is what can be called being free from desires, which is what is the important thing to bear in mind as we proceed with the discussion. So in looking at a householder, there are two nomenclatures. There's the grahastas, those who live together with wife, children, but they're living transcendentally because they're working towards that goal that Lord Krishna had defined. So the second category or nomenclature for a householder is the grihamedidi, those who living only for the benefit of the family members, either centered in the home or else in the extended sense. So it could also be, you know, the broader society they're considering their family. like in the country where I'm from, this is very much the case. The culture is that one is working not only for one's immediate family, but also for one's community. So this is very much seen in, like, there's a whole system. If you meet one African person, that person will tell you that the money that they're making at that particular moment is actually going to be going to a fund, a pool. And then when there's some event in the family, such as, say, a death, then money is drawn from the pool automatically to pay for all the funerary arrangements. So they are very much seeing themselves as part of a community. So now, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur particularly points this thing out, that those persons, the grihamedis, who are working exclusively for the benefit of their family members, even if it's in the extended sense, they're actually envious of others. So this is, you know, quite a strong statement brought up, because it's reflecting the condition in the heart. So actually, grihamedi, medi means jealousy. So that means that one particular group of grihamedis are actually jealous of another group of Grihamedis. This is both in the family unit or in the extended community sense or even in a nation sense. So that's the condition of the heart, because there's selfish interest. It's, you know, my family members or my community. Then there's enviousness towards those that are not part of that community, because they're blocked out of one's selfish interest. One's heart is closed to that other community or that other nation. So Maharaj Yudhisthira here, he's referring to this category of householder, that category that's actually completely blind to knowledge of the ultimate truth. I mean, they're not questioning their necessity to give pleasure to their senses or their all their desires that they need to fulfill on a selfish level. It's not been questioned. So now, the Grihamedi is also not questioning something else, and that is, he's not questioning that sense of himself as having some sort of complete right to his family members. So there's a description that Sukadev Goswami gives of the entire lifetime of such a householder. So he puts it into a little few sentences. It's the beauty of a transcendentalist, you know, a whole complex network can be simplified in two sentences. So here's Srila Sukadev Goswami. The lifetime of such an envious householder, so he uses the same word, is passed at night, either in sleeping or in sex indulgence, and in the daytime, either in making money or maintaining family members. So this is from the Srimad Bhagavatam in the second canto, and the first chapter in the third verse. So this is the description of what their activities are. So the principle, or the fundamental truth, you could say, in living life by the Grihamedi is in fact, and it applies to the whole of human civilization at the present moment, is that of sleeping and sex indulgence at night and earning money in the day and spending that money for the family maintenance. So that's the ultimate truth that whereby they're living, or human civilization in general at the present time. So naturally, this is very simple to understand. I had drawing a personal example, I had a father who would state this verbally. It wasn't, you know, something that, you know, he's, you know, going through life and just working, and but he would state it, what his belief system was. So he would actually say, "This is for my children." You know, whatever he was, you know, accumulating, "This is for my children." But the selfishness was so strong that at the time when it came to, I have to actually leave this world, he said, "No, actually, nobody should get any of this." So everything he'd accumulated, so great was the attachment that even though the desire was to maintain the family members, but actually parting with the what had been accumulated was very difficult. And he would state things clearly. So, you know, it was hearing what has been stated here in the Shastras. So sometimes I laugh because I always remember the attached father. So so now the instructions of the Vedas are directed towards liberating the spirit soul from matter. And so that knowledge is named Atmatattva. So The persons that Maharaj Yudhisthira is referring to here, he puts it staying at home without knowledge of the goal of life. So he's referring to those materialistic men who are not aware of this knowledge, this atma-tattva, and are more inclined towards economic development for enjoyment on a very gross level. So he's wanting to know something of persons in that position. So the Vedic standpoint is that such persons are allowed regulated economic development and the association of women for sex indulgence, because this is a lot in the purport, Srila Prabhupada brings it up. So this is permitted for, as they're known, this category of materialistic persons, they're known as karmis or laborers for fruitive results. So there's concession given. So we'll hear a little bit about how the regulation works. Now, on the other side of the karmis or fruitive workers, there's also the gyanis, the yogis, and the devotees. So those are the other categories of persons. And for them, it's a different matter. they're actually strictly prohibited in the area of sex indulgence, strictly prohibited. There's no concession for it because it's indulgence, I mean, from that perspective. So since the goal of life that Lord Krishna outlined is to give up all desires for sense gratification and to live free from those desires, there's a prescription that's given. Because, you know, like when there's some illness, you have to get some formula to try and attend to that illness so that you can go past that illness. So, you know, having lots of sense desires or desires to give pleasure to one's senses, it's a kind of illness. So there has to be a prescription, some sort of thing that one can do to take care of that problem. So in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, in the Adi Lila 527, I found this, actually Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur quoting it in dealing with this issue of householders. And I'm going to read it. It's kind of interesting. Na griham griham iti ahur, taya hi sahita sarvan, grihini griham uchete, purushartan samasmute. Samasnute. So the translation, merely a house is not a home, for it is a wife who gives a home its meaning. If one lives at home with his wife, together they can fulfill all the interests of human life. So this is the prescription. So I guess we have to look at it a little bit closely. So the emphasis is that there's recognition of the important role that the wife's going to play in the whole prescription to deal with the desires for giving pleasure to the senses. That emphasis is that the husband and wife are working together. And there are four areas where they have to work together, because these are the four areas of interest generally in human life, you know, if you put it into broad categories. There's the area of religiosity, there's the area of economic development, the area of sense gratification, and liberation. So those are the four areas that have to be tackled in a united kind of way. That's the prescription given from Chaitanya Charitamrita. So this means that whatever is prohibited in the scriptures is called irreligion, and whatever is condoned, that's called religion. So when one's looking at the area of religiosity, both persons have to have the same view and work together. So that means that the husband has to take help from the wife to give up that's prohibited. And in the same way, the husband has to get help from the wife to follow the prescriptions of the particular vana, in this case being grahastas. So I remember a situation where so persons falling into the devotee category. There's a husband and wife, and the husband wouldn't take the help from the wife. So the difficulty was sex indulgence. So the husband wouldn't take the help of the wife who was wishing to follow the scriptural prohibition. And so the husband couldn't sustain that situation because he wouldn't take help from the wife. So then that opportunity to work together couldn't proceed. So it's essential for the husband to be willing to take help from the wife. So, now, earlier on, we found Narada Muni telling Yudhisthira Maharaj that the root of all religious principles is the Supreme Being and that he's the essence of all Vedic knowledge. We read that a short while back in the 11th chapter of the 7th canto. So, Srila Prabhupada, he explains that all religious principles aim at learning how to render transcendental service. So any prohibition or something that's condoned, it's actually helping one to learn how to render transcendental loving service. So, and particularly that motivated part isn't there. And also that the transcendental loving service isn't checked in some way by material conditions. That's the reason for those prohibitions or things being condoned. So now, if one looks at the second category, the one of economic development. So for the Vaishnava householder, any occupation that is engaged in, and there may be many different occupations one finds when one looks at the broad category of Vaishnavas, it's never performed with the idea of material gain. So, you know, the mentality with which one is approaching the occupation can't be, oh, this is my gain for performing this occupation. And in particular, because the devotee, the Vaishnava householder, is engaged in some occupation and there is some gain that's coming from it on a material level, that gain should also never be used to actually cultivate something that's going to put a focus on gratifying or giving pleasure to the senses. So it's one has to be careful. So now for the category of householders who haven't come to the point of being devotees and are merely concerned with economic development per se. So I found this, I was looking at this, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he doesn't use the words Griha Medhi when he's talking of these two categories of householders. Rather, he's referring to Even the category of person that's not the gyani, that's not the devotee, as being a smarta. So I found this very interesting because usually one's just hearing, you know, fruitive worker, laborer, but Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur is using the term smarta for that category of person that's concerned with, you know, economic development. So he says the smarta householder, whatever they achieve through following religious principles, so there may be assets that come like a house or children are considered an asset, and so are animals are considered an asset, well, particularly if one has a cow, but I don't know if it applies to having dogs and cats as pets, I'm not sure, but it's, I don't know, birds, I'm not sure. Maybe farm animals, but they're considered assets. So all those things, the particular smarter householder just has to follow religious principles, and then whatever comes in the category of assets, he just has to accept those things. So, you know, again, it's not like putting a huge emphasis on material gain. Now, this way of life, say for the smarter householder who's, you know, following religious principles, isn't exclusively, you know, material gain. That category of persons, they have to follow the religious principles, and it's put by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, day and night, just like here, Maharaj Yudhisthira is, or Srila Sukadev, well, he was asking how do they come to the point of liberation, but Srila Sukadev Goswami spoke about what the hugely materialistic Grihamedis are doing day and night. So here, for those who have taken up following the religious principles, day and night, they must follow the religious principles. This category of persons, the smarter householders who have taken up following religious principles, they have to continue with that. And in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the 11th canto, you find a reference to this way of life. It says, as long as one is not satiated by fruitive activity and has not awakened his taste for devotional service by Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, one has to act according to the regulative principles of the Vedic injunctions. So they have to follow all the Vedic injunctions because there's still that taste for fruitive activity. So now, if one moves to looking at this point of liberation, there's two kinds of liberation. There's relief from extreme distress, it's liberating, and this is particularly for those who just have some dry knowledge. For them, that the liberation is just to be getting free from material distress. And the other kind of liberation is spiritual happiness. So those are the two kinds of liberation. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur states it that way. You'll find that in Bhakti Loka, his very nice book. So for the Vaishnava householder, there's a desire for transcendental happiness. That's what the devotee category is looking for, transcendental happiness. And so there, the husband and wife are working together for the purpose of achieving transcendental happiness. And this is working towards liberation. which is the question Maharaj Yudhisthira asked. now, because, you know, Lord Krishna said what the goal of life is, you know, that ultimately one's, you know, freeing oneself from that desire to give pleasure to the senses and even becoming free from those kind of desires. It's interesting to look at what thing is actually being given up by the grahastha Vaishnava. And it's interesting, what the grahastha Vaishnava is giving up is actually speaking intimately with woman other than his wife. That's one of the things. And then the other thing that's being given up is being excessively fond of his own wife. So, so that's what's going on just automatically with the pursuit of transcendental happiness. It's interesting, it's built in. So now the economic development that's enjoyed by the grahastha is that whatever they obtain by practicing dharma for the purpose of liberation, meaning from matter, not for giving pleasure to their senses, they just accept that. So it's not like, you know, the pursuit of, but rather it's just accepting what's come by practicing dharma. So that's the foremost thing that one is focused on. So, basically, economic development for the Vaishnava grahastha just helps them maintain their lives, with the real purpose being to understand the ultimate truth. So, by proceeding in this way, the grahastha Vaishnava is able to see the difference between karma and spiritual activities. So that's the nice thing that happens as they're proceeding with following the scriptural rules. They're able to distinguish the difference. So, and what's required is an acceptance on the part of the Vaishnavas, grahastas. They accept this division of Vanashram and they practice the Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha. So they're practicing, you know, following the scriptural rules and regulations. They have a proper understanding of what economic development is. And they also are shifting their focus, the karma part, the sensory enjoyment. It's understood that that is not pursued, that's not cultivated. So gradually, you know, everything gets regulated. So one has some need for some sensory enjoyment, but everything is regulated so much at some time, and one works on decreasing it over a lifetime. So, by properly performing these activities, and it's called Trivarga, you know, following Dharma, religious injunctions, practicing or proceeding with economic development and controlling the sense enjoyment part, or at least not cultivating it. the Vaishnava grahastha's character becomes pure. That's actually what transpires with proceeding in this way. so the liberation that's practiced here, which is what Maharaj Yudhisthira looked at, and I've At this moment, I'm pointing to the category of Vaishnava devotees as opposed to the fruit of workers or the laborers. That pure character is achieved through both practicing in this careful way and also through hearing and chanting and remembering the names, forms, qualities, and pastimes of Lord Krishna. So the two are going together as they're proceeding through that particular ashram. So one part I didn't cover, which was in that original definition of Lord Krishna for what the ultimate goal is, and that was to be free of the false ego. Now, Srila Prabhupada, in this purport, he refers to the teachings of Lord Rishabhdev. And Lord Rishabhdev gives the way that this attachment, which happens to wife, to children, and to the home, how it undergoes change. And this is how he puts it. When the strong knot in the heart of a person implicated in material life due to the results of past actions is slackened, one turns away from the attachment to home, wife, and children. So there's a big knot in the heart. It's been cultivated over many lifetimes. I mean, persons have been working in a particular way and developing knowledge in a particular way over many lifetimes. And Srila Bhaktivinoda Kaur refers to it as prejudices. So one is carrying these prejudices through life, and these are what form that knot in the heart. So it actually starts to slacken a little, like the knot, you know, loosens up a bit when attachment starts to the wife, the children starts decreasing. So, and this is through the carefully following the process of attending to the injunctions and keeping the focus correct on not cultivating sensual enjoyment and just being very satisfied with what's coming just from following the scriptural rules and regulations. So that very simple approach and keeping it always in mind, that's what's actually allowing that knot to loosen up. And the attachment is, you know, subsiding. So in this way, one gives up the basic principle of illusion of, you know, me, the importance of myself, and everything that's mine. And that's that hard knot, you know, that's holding on. So, and that's when liberation can happen. So that knot has to be slackened. So, you know, it's gradually just keeping the right perspective and proceeding with one's dharmic activities. So, of course, this engagement in devotional service is freeing one from all those material concepts. And one's getting knowledge. And through practicing, you know, what the knowledge is one is receiving and practicing. So one has to be consciously practicing. Some detachment starts coming. So, and that's why that attachment in the heart starts to slacken. So, and then of course one's becoming eligible for the transcendental world. So, and one of the things I will note from personal experience, that this slackening or this attachment in the heart, why it's slackening, is largely due to a saintly person engaging a grahastha in all sorts of activities
for the gradual development of their Krishna consciousness. Like if I look back, I see a whole thread of my spiritual master stepping in regularly to give some little activity to perform here, some little activity to perform there, some little activity to perform there. And I see how it's had a profound effect on just allowing for knowledge and some detachment to come. So every time I've taken a camera into my hands, even if it's been with some idea of some work, immediately the presence of my spiritual master is there. I remember this is, it's not for material gain, but it's actually something that an activity I'm performing that's connected to moving forward, allowing for any attachment to decrease, and I'm moving towards becoming more detached. So that presence of a saintly person just giving little activities that engage one is an essential part also in gradually developing one's Krishna consciousness. So these are some thoughts. If there's anybody would like to add something or open up a discussion. Jai Baladev is here.
Hare Krishna. Thank you for your class. You made some nice points. I'd like to mention, I haven't really formulated a question, but maybe you could expand on some of these points. One funny point you were mentioning that excessive attachment to one's wife. And that reminded me of something one devotee said. He said, I can't get married because it's like a teaser. he was like, I'll have 30 kids, but the problem is you can't maintain them. And so, but we see that some points you were mentioning that there's basically two types of maintenance, like maintaining the kids with the food, money, clothing, shelter, etc., but also our spiritual maintenance, and that applies for everyone. And you were mentioning that some householders who are not necessarily devotees, but they're more concerned about economic development. But we could see in the material world that real maintenance, like in one lecture I'm thinking of now that I really appreciate Prabhupada, it's called, if you look on Prabhupada Vani, it's called, How Shall I Be Maintained? How shall I be maintained? And in that lecture, Prabhupada says, maintenance is no problem for Krishna. He's maintaining the elephants. We should be more concerned about maintaining our Krishna consciousness. And we could see that, like for example, celebrities, they have everything, money, good health, fame. But if only one, magazine slanders their reputation, they can't take shelter of any of that. None of that to give them happiness. So that's what the case you were mentioning with the Grihamedi. Householders, I think you were mentioning that one, that basically means one householder is jealous of another or something. You were mentioning that, right? Is that correct? And we can see that whether one is a brahmachari, there's competition, householder competition. So my question is that on a daily basis as devotees, even though we're chanting Hare Krishna, but still, we may be maintaining ourselves like a child. A child would rather maintain himself with candy. It's in much the same way, we may not pay attention to this, but it's like we may maintain ourselves with maybe not Krishna Katha, maybe a little here, but with operas. But there's a phrase I'm thinking of in relation to the kid. Have you heard the phrase, sweet revenge? So sweet revenge is like candy, and that's usually how we maintain ourselves. Not just sweet revenge, sweet gossip, or sweet things on the internet that we like to look at. So all these things we maintain ourselves. So my question is that how do we keep this in mind? Is that, what are some steps we could do that, we may maintain ourselves in circumstantial happiness? That's why the Bhagavatam says, Samsir Dir Hadi Toshna, Atapumbir Dwija Shresta Varnashram Vibhagasha Swanotitasha Damasa Samsir Dir Hadi Toshna. It doesn't matter which one's Varnashram is, if you're not performing Samsir Dir Hadi Toshna, if you're not pleasing Hadi, then you'll still be unhappy by overcome by pride, envy, vengeance. You will never be happy. So, what are some steps we could do to due to real maintenance.
That's a nice question.
Due to real maintenance, not just circumstantial happiness. I'll be happy in householder life, brahmachari life. No, you won't if you're not performing samsa de haritoshana. So these are some points to mention. I haven't really formulated a good question, but maybe you could expand on that.
You did form a very nice question, so. Jai Baladev. Thank you very much. Your question, as I understand it, is what steps can one take, be it in a brahmachari ashram or grihastha ashram, to do proper maintenance, meaning spiritual maintenance, rather than the other things that one finds oneself seeing as necessary for one's maintenance, be it the internet or gossip or ideas of revenge even. Okay, so, well, the thing to bear in mind is that all the scriptural injunctions, meaning, you know, what's recommended that one does in order to be able to please Lord Krishna, those are actually representing the will of Lord Krishna. So they're very powerful. It means that that's what Krishna wants. So if one wants to please, one is going to take into account what it is that somebody wants. And especially in the case of Lord Krishna, so all the injunctions and prohibitions, they're actually representing Krishna's will. So if one finds that one thinks, oh, there's certain things that I see as necessary for my maintenance, such as, let's say some visual enjoyment on the internet, or maybe it's even a whole category of private thoughts that give one pleasure, but they actually are thoughts that are concerned with, you know, the destruction of someone. So then the good thing to do is to look at what are those, what is Krishna's will expressed through the scriptural injunctions. So let's say, for instance, something like gossip. So, you know, in Nectar of Instruction, there's a whole list of things that are detrimental to performing devotional service. So those represent the will of Krishna, and in that list is the one of talking unnecessarily or too much, or collecting too much more than one needs, or what is the other thing? Anyway, those two I'm remembering right now, just in reference to the point you brought up. So the scriptural injunction is, you know, keep it in check. So one may be somewhat attached to the particular sensual pleasure that one believes one needs for one's maintenance, maybe as visual, the internet, so or gossip, but then one takes into account, oh, okay, it actually, what we're hearing there, the instructions of Srila Rupa Goswami is, oh, it's actually detrimental to devotional service to be talking too much, engaging in unnecessary talk. It's actually detrimental to devotional service. It's so gossip, you realize, okay, have to keep it in check. It's not something that's the will of Krishna according to that injunction that's coming there. It's going against his will. So that means that if I'm indulging in this, I'm not actually making room for pleasing Krishna. So so it's good to reference the injunctions to help one to try and alter some behavior, or be it on the subtle plane, like the cognitive behavior, or on the more gross plane. And that way one is in line with Krishna's will. So automatically one feels the blessings, especially when one makes an effort to take those injunctions and apply them in one's life. So one say sees, I've got this particular behavior, say the gross behavior, or I've got the subtle behavior. So one looks at how frequently it happens. I mean, I think Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur used to make lists. This is what I want to change. So he'd make a list so one could do the same thing. Gossip. Okay, today, 3 occasions, gossip took place. This external gross behavior. You can write down the internal behavior, the cognitive part that's, looking for the destruction of someone. Okay, this took place. Oh, yes. This morning I found my mind really dwelling on this meditation. Okay, write it down. Put a little tick. Happened that time. Happened at 10 o'clock. Happened at 4 o'clock. Happened at 6 o'clock. So then you have a list. You actually see, this is happening 3 times a day. I'm going to make it a goal for it to happen 2 times a day. So, you've set little steps for yourself to decrease the behavior, because you're following scriptural injunctions, so you know you'll be pleasing Krishna by making an effort to decrease that. So that's some thought. And then, of course, you can actually give yourself a reward by finding the best, most favorite prasadam that one likes and have that as a reward for the effort you've made.
You mentioned Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, the putting this term, the smarta householder. And if you can clarify a little further, because externally, I'm thinking of a smarta. When I think of a smarta, I'm thinking, maybe the experience in Jagannath Puri, that externally, these are, everything looks in place. I mean, there's not, you don't see excessively materialistic people. They're clean, brahminical, simple, very dedicated, to their activity, they're worshiping the Lord. And so, they're following the religious principle, they're following rules and regulations. So what it makes a difference between, between that Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur puts them in the category of as the Grihamedi, as the Grihamudhati. Although externally it appears, that they follow in everything like that.
Yes, I found it so fascinating. That's why I brought it up, that he's doing precisely that. The distinguishing factor, or at least you painted the picture of externally what the smarta householder looks like. And it's very accurate, the picture, because they are following religious principles. So they're following Vedic injunctions. So they're actually not striving for material gain when they're performing their occupation. So they're actually understanding, this is actually not what the Vedas are teaching. Rather, the emphasis should be on being satisfied with what comes to one by one's occupation. So they're having the right mentality, and they are also performing the various Vedic injunctions of visiting holy places. You see people when you're visiting there. It'll be jam-packed at certain times of the day, the area around the Jagannath Puri temple. I mean, jam-packed, like crowds of people, because they're actually coming to visit a holy place, take darshan of the deities. So they're following scriptural rules. So indeed, externally it's correct, and internally they have the right understanding. But what the difference, or what causes them to fall into the same category as the laborer, the kami, the fruit of worker, is the fact that they're following what's called trivarga, three aspects of interest, like the interest of religiosity, the interest of economic development, and the interest of sense enjoyment. But they haven't put the focus on liberation. So that's why they're falling into the same category. So the liberation part is the discerning factor for allowing then one to fall into the category of being a gyani or a devotee. So they haven't taken that step. So they can actually keep following the trivarga path for lifetimes. Yeah. So that's was what I understood when I looked at Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's teachings. Thank you for asking the question. So thank you very much. Hare Krishna.